Okay, so first of all, thank you all for coming. And I just want to let you know that this is not about party lines and it's not about political theater. This is about the truth. We're here to learn the truth. The American Republic stands at a crossroads where secrecy has replaced accountability. We can all see that. And there's been a lot of narratives that have replaced knowledge, and citizens are treated like data points in somebody else's experiment. So my goal here is very simple, to find out who really governs this country, where our freedom has gone, and how we can take it back peacefully but decisively. To do that, I've invited two people are here, and they know from the inside how the machinery works. General Michael Flynn, who understands the intelligent architecture of power, and Catherine Austin Fitz, who has tracked the hidden flows of money that fuel it. And together, they bring the tactical and financial maps of a system most Americans only sense but never see. So again, this is not an interview. It's a reconnaissance for the soul of the Republic, to put it lightly. So on that, what I'm assuming a lot of Americans really want to know, who really governs America today? The voters, elected officials, unelected officials, between the financial, between the administration, who governs us today? Who's really in control, if there is an answer to that?
I'll start with that. I'll start with that question, Kat.
Okay.
And you know, I'll answer it this way. In the annals of history, when tyranny reigned supreme over the lives and the souls of people, you know, so whatever the system was at the moment in history, and the people got tired of it, they revolted. And we are not in a modern era that is so enlightened that human beings can't revolt. And I do believe that history is provides multiple examples where human beings get tired of having that yoke around their neck, that yoke of tyranny around their neck. And I think this modern era, we are clearly in, you know, as you and I have spoken about, we're clearly in a spiritual, emotional, and intellectual war. And the masses, the people, particularly in the United States of America, which I have a really good fingertip feel for, are getting tired of this yoke of tyranny that our government has put around our necks. And I'll leave it at that, you know, because I do think that I know that many, many people are just at the breaking point. And when that happens, some will go silent back into their caves. Others will not. And I pray that the leaders that we do have are smart enough to recognize the conditions that we face.
Amen to that. And Catherine, I know that you've done deep dives on how much money has disappeared from federal ledgers, and who's funding all this, in essence.
So it's a multiple parties who are funding it, but primarily it's run by the central bank, since they have the, between them and the Treasury, they have the ability to generate enough, as much debt as they want and as much credit to fund that debt. But I would say, grossly oversimplified, there's a movie that says all wars are bankers' wars. And in my experience, the bankers increasingly run everything. And what we're watching, I call a financial coup d'etat, because the bankers have decided, for several centuries, we've had a balance of power between the people's representatives controlling fiscal policy or taxation and the bankers controlling monetary policy. And now the bankers have decided to use digital technology to essentially assert control of the fiscal side of the house as well as the monetary side of the house. And they can do that with CBDC or with stable coins and asset tokens as programmable money. And they're moving to do that. We just saw in Davos, Larry Fink, who's the acting co-chair of WEF, very aggressively promoting that they intend to move the entire financial system into this kind of digital control grid. So it's becoming very open, the descriptions of what they intend to do. So essentially, you're looking to collapse the republic and go to a system where the bankers control both monetary and fiscal policy. And whether they leave the legislative representatives in the executive branch in place as a theater or not, I don't know. This could, you know, it's very fluid and it could go in many directions. And one of the things to understand is one of the reasons this has been able to happen, it's been very incremental for decades, is the federal government does not run its financial statements and its financial operations in accordance with the law, and they don't properly disclose it. And we've had many Americans going along with that. You know, sort of the attitude has been, as long as I get my check, I'm okay with the system as it is.
Yeah, and can I jump on that comment? Because I think, you know, first of all, for the audience that's listening, I first came into knowing Catherine Austin Fitz when she did a presentation on the International Monetary Fund. So if you really want to know what the heck's going on in the global economic system and the conditions that we are all facing, even at the dinner table, and the price of food, listen to what she says, because she's been warning like John the Baptist for a long time, many, many, many years, you know, and probably decades, but certainly for me, for the last 5 years. So the essence of how I see what Catherine just said, you know, we always say follow the money, right? Follow the money. Because in war, it's the same thing. Physical war, it's the same thing. Follow the money. Who is benefiting? You know, why are they benefiting? But I would add that it's not only follow the money, but it's also listen to the leaders who own the money or who control the money, because they're going to indicate, just like she just said about BlackRock's leader, CEO, you know, Fink, in his speech at Davos, and many, many others who have talked about this. It's not just following the money and seeing where it's going or, you know, the direction that it's heading, but also we better listen to those who own the money, those who control the money, because we don't, people. And I think that that's really important. And it does tend, you know, this kind of a conversation tends to go over people's heads, because it's like, you know, it's just too much for me. It's like saying to somebody, well, our nation has $40 trillion in debt. I mean, people don't understand that, so they just let it go. But that's what we're facing. And it's this idea of everything revolves around what the price of something is and the political decisions. So we've got to listen to those who own the money. And we don't. We don't own the money.
So I have to jump in. Can I jump in, Saga?
Yes, I was just going to point to you.
Because we do own a lot of the money. If everybody listening to this got 10 people and they got 10 people and they got 10 people who do control the money that they put at BlackRock and they pulled it out, or any of the other financial institutions have been doing this or the global financial crisis, if they shifted the money, you know, if instead of paying just attention to politics, we paid attention to where our money was going, as well as the institutions who we can influence as to where they're putting their money. In fact, we could shift enormous proportion of the money.
Well, it's like even Florida, DeSantis said any institution that's dealing with DEI, he pulled the money, the state money from it. But Catherine, if you could expand on that, I believe you call it coming clean, because it's like even I've been going through a process because I had my money at one of the big banks. And it's like, no, if you look at who owns that. So I've been slowly pulling it out and putting it into my credit union. And it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, no stocks or bonds there. However, I do get the money market. Well, the high yield money market there, that so I get some interest. But again, my freedom is worth more than what I could be making on a stock, because you're absolutely right. We, the people, do have the power.
So I'm curious what Mike's version of this is. So when I was trained on Wall Street, one of the things we were trained to do was never finance our enemy. And so I find it very appalling that many Americans are, in fact, financing their enemy. But what was the military and intelligence equivalent of that? Were you Were you trained never to provide free intel to your enemies?
Well, is this kind of like there's already information warfare, and General Flynn, you are the guy with that knows this about the psyops, the information warfare that we're under.
Yeah, you know, you said we're, you know, when you at the top of the show here, you talked about the reconnaissance of the soul and the reconnaissance of the soul of America,
soul of the Republic.
Soul of the Republic. There you go. I love that. I love that.
Thank you.
Soul of the Republic. And so, you know, I always say, Catherine, that all war is deception, right? All war is deception. And deception happens on the tactical battlefield where you deceive the enemy, where you're going to, you know, which side of the battlefield you're going to attack on. But strategically, there is deception happening for the, you know, to the masses that are financing the war that we are involved in. So when you think about Afghanistan, that the United States was involved in for the better part of 20 years, same with Iraq, you know, we spent somewhere between, I'll just, you know, lowball it, $10 trillion, maybe up to $15 trillion for both of those wars. And I think the numbers are actually higher. So, you know, were we financing our enemies? And on the battlefield, the answer is, sometimes we do. Sometimes we pay our enemies to help us, right? To help our side, to help us understand, you know, what's going on, their intentions, their, you know, their strengths, their weaknesses, things like that. So we actually will pay our enemies on a battlefield. That's always been the case. Heck, George Washington, in the beginning of our country, you know, he had probably one of the best spy networks going. Yeah. So, but strategically, we are in fact paying our enemies. I mean, and it's just insane when people really are able to see which, you know, where the money's coming from for Ukraine, as an example, or where the money's coming from for the current fight in the Middle East, whether it's the revolution in Iran, whether it's the new Syrian president, Jolani, who's, you know, murdering Christians up in the northern part of Iraq and northern part of Syria. I mean, they're just throwing them off the roofs now, and we're backing it.
Well, where the money's coming from up in Minnesota.
Where the money's come up, you know, when we talk about the National Endowment for Democracy, as an example, where, they've been funded for, I think, since the mid-80s to the tune of about $300 million a year. And that money goes directly into the coffers of these activists. So we're funding it. And people don't understand that. It's like, how can we do this, right? You know, a regular old American will say, how can we do this? And last thing I'd say to both of you, most Americans don't have health care. Most Americans don't have stocks. Most Americans can't afford to fill their gas tank up in their car, you know, twice a month. I mean, most Americans can't. So we've got to be very conscious about the bubble that some of us live in. And that's, you know, this past week and so that's kind of what we were talking about, to make sure that we're not just talking to the elite,
right,
of you know, of our world, and not to the regular folk out there who are getting tired of having their soul probed.
Well, they're tired. They're getting tired. And it's like, my audience is more the grassroots. And what I've been trying to tell them on a scale, it's because there's all these shiny objects, all this stuff going on a great big huge scale. However, on a local scale, use cash. And I know that sounds trite. However, we need to fight the digital control grid, and we need to fight the CBDCs and all this coming down on us, because the more it comes down on us from, you know, it's kind of like they're sneaking in. Once that's in place, we have no freedoms. Mm-hmm. So what I tell people, what can you do? Use cash. And if a business doesn't take cash, don't do business there. So free citizens need to resist the algorithms, the control, and the surveillance without resorting to violence. And so I'd like to dig a little deeper into that, how you all see we can, in essence, resist that as citizens.
There are three parts that are really the main pieces of the system. So one is programmable digital money, which could be stable coins and asset tokens on a distributed ledger or CBDC. The second is a digital ID. But then the third is the local infrastructure that does a lot of the surveillance and coercion. And one of the things that's happening is that you see more and more people as the infrastructure comes in. So the new FCC rules to override local control of the telecom towers. So they're trying to put up telecom towers every 400 to 700 feet. And now we have flock cameras everywhere. And in addition, you see the data centers going in with the extraordinary impact on energy, water, land, and other things. And as that physical infrastructure goes in that represents the control grid, people are finally beginning to realize, oh, this is really real. And we're seeing tremendous pushback against all the different hardware aspects of the control grid, whether it's the telecom centers, the data centers, the telecom towers, the data centers, and especially the flock cameras. There's a new website called DFlock, and everybody goes in and reports their flock cameras, and a lot of contracts have been canceled. So, and to me, this is an incredible opportunity because we're coming into an election in November, and an election is when people pay attention to these issues and they come out and talk. So my house in Tennessee is in a very, you know, I would say low income per capita area, but it's amazing when the elections come around, everybody's out there talking about it. And we have a lot of people who care about the local elections. So the state elections and the local elections are very important and can become very controversial and interesting. So to me, the election is an opportunity where you get people talking about these things.
And let me jump on that too, if you don't mind, because I think what Catherine just put her finger on is the essence of ensuring that the this quilt of America doesn't fray. And that's local action. And you've heard me say this 100 times, you know, local action equals a national impact. And I think that more and more Americans have realized that they have to get involved in their local communities far more than just worrying about who the president of the United States is or who their U.S. senator is or congressman, right? I mean, those still matter, but what matters and what we've seen, what I've seen, and I mean, I've seen it in droves, is the arguments of by a mom standing at a podium for 3 minutes yelling about, you know, how devastating the school system is to her children, right? And that's what changes, and that's how we change things, right? Is to really impact at the local level and to get involved, not just stand at a podium and shout at the council members or the school board, but actually find ways to organize and then run. And I've got many, many examples, primarily of women, young women, you know, for the most part, that have stood their ground in communities across America and have said, I am not going to do this anymore. I'm going to get involved and run for local office. I pray that we're not too late in the scheme of history, because I do think that we're a bit behind the power curve. I think the complacency in America is moving more towards apathy. But I still think that we have an opportunity by teaching and educating more and more people at the local level, and particularly with things like what Catherine does. I mean, her Solari report is amazing. It's really great. It's understandable. That's that kind of information that's understandable. That last slide that you just put up, you know, that's understandable to somebody who looks at it and goes, you know, health, finance, you know, and then you're just your economic freedom. I mean, you know, do you want to lose these things? No. Okay, then here's what you've got to do about it, right? And I think that that's what we have to have. The last point on this is that when I look at Congress, at the federal level, and even in the White House, the amount of money that is required, they've moved past representing the people that they're supposed to represent, and they represent the special interests of who gives them the most money. And, you know, it is a pay-to-play system, and if you pay, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get you know, rewarded for that. And I think that the debates when these representatives come back home during their breaks or during the election season, which we're going to go into a really important election season, the American people better show up to the when these people come into their, you know, gymnasiums and churches or public houses to address their constituency to get their votes again. People better, you know, be standing their ground and saying, you're not going to get my vote. You know, you're going to, unless you do the following things. But if the person has already demonstrated that they have taken your money, you know, they've lied to you, they've taken your money, you've given it to them, and then they go back to Washington, D.C., and they do just the opposite. We've got to stop that level of insanity, because that is the definition of it, of insanity, right? You do the same thing over and over again, you get the same results, and it's not something that you want.
Well, what is it that, because I, again, focused on Florida. And so as a state, I see it's kind of like, okay, national, I have to keep my focus on Florida and try to get as much done legislatively in Florida. But it's not just the state, it's also the counties, it's the sheriffs. It's what do you think we could be doing now to reassert lawful constitutional authority? What can the grassroots be doing to assert that?
Let me just do a quick answer, and then Catherine, I'm just because of my time here. So Ron, you mentioned Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis of Florida recently, you know, he signed this DEI thing. We're not going to have DEI in Florida anymore. Well, it's like Trump signing an executive order. And then he goes on it from the Oval Office. He shows everybody the executive order. That doesn't mean that it's actually being executed. I can tell you right now that the county that I live in, they could care less about Ron DeSantis is, his executive orders to remove DEI. We have DEI all over our school system. All they do is they change the name. I can tell you in the Department of War, you know, even though Trump said and Pete Hegseth said we're going to eliminate DEI, they just changed the name and they just restructured. The people down below, the deep state bureaucrats, they just restructure and make it, you know, they make it look different. But it's the same thing. So, you know, leaders have to go check on things. What gets checked is what gets done. And that's, you know, I've led large organizations in my military career. And when I put out an order, I expected everybody to follow it. But what I had to go do is I had to go show up to places unannounced and check. And when I, you know, if I announced where I was going to go, of course, they would put the dog and the pony out, you know, to make sure that everything was nice and clean and everything looked good, right? And then when you walk back away, you know, you would say the governor or the commander would go, hey, everything's wonderful. But if you show up unannounced and you check, or if you have teams of people go and check with unannounced, believe me, you find the dirt that's been swept under the rug.
Well, I think that, like, in light of, again, I go back to Minnesota, what was it Cam Higby has done and what Shirley has done and different people have done, these undercover citizen journalists seem to be reporting and showing up a lot of things. And that alerts, in essence, the grassroots for the pushback. So what do you think if there was one single truth that, if fully revealed, would collapse the current power structure, what do you think it would be?
Place-based financial statements that were accurate.
Say that again?
Place-based financial statements that were accurate.
Can you explain that more?
Yeah, so I'll tell the story. In 1996, we started publishing a tool called Community Wizard, and you could identify what you defined as your neighborhood, whether it was your congressional district, your zip code, your municipality, and you could map out all the money that was supposed to be public in the federal government but wasn't public in your zip code. And I had an old partner from Wall Street who came down and told me it was a stupid idea and would never work. And I said, well, where do you live? He said, I live in Bronxville. So we pulled up everything we had on Bronxville in his neighborhood. And he started screaming in Spanish. He was Cuban. And I said, what are you screaming about? And he said, do you have any idea how corrupt this is? Apparently, the first item was the flood insurance. He said, Bronxville is a hill. I've lived there for 30 years. It's on a hill. There are no floods in Bronxville. This is totally corrupt. Anyway. So the next day, I had a meeting with him at 10:30. I called and called and called. I couldn't get through till 12:30. And I said, Luis, where have you been? He said, I've been on the phone since early this morning with the deputy mayor of Bronxville, and I've gone through every one of these numbers one by one, and all this corruption is going to stop. And I said, I thought you thought it was hopeless. He said, that's before I had the numbers. Now, what I will tell you is, if you look at all the money that we are spending, you know, like the daycare center money or any of these other things, if local business people and local leaders had absolute access to all the information and the citizens had it too, the opportunities to re-engineer the money in ways that create lots of business and local wealth are tremendous. So, you know, and if you combine that with jumbo waivers or other ways of making the rules much more flexible, so that small farms and small business can get back in the game. You can create enormous amounts of local wealth and dramatically reduce the deficit.
Well, hopefully that's what the CFO is doing with the Florida.
Absolutely. Yes. Nobody, well, the CFO of Florida is trying to do that.
Yes.
But what I will tell you is nobody wants to do that because instead they want to suck up the money centrally and give it to the mega rich and the donors. And that's exactly what's been happening.
Those days hopefully are getting to where they're long gone. Those days we can't.
You know, one of the things, and I would just throw this out again for your audience and for Catherine, because I have such enormous respect for her intellect on this issue, because it's I've learned more from her, you know, than listen to all these other, you know, people who are actually the opposite of her trying to destroy our system and take it over. Well, one of the things that I think that I could use, certainly, and I think for the American people, because I don't consider myself, you know, I'm sort of a wave top guy. If I want to get into the weeds, I can get into the weeds, but almost like a set of like talking points that the American people can use when they address their elected leaders. Simple talking points. And I'll go back to that slide again, because you had mentioned something there that sorry, I had to ask you, what does that mean? Because I didn't know what that meant. And there's things that just come, even like saying the acronym CBDC, right? Central Bank Digital.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people don't know what that is because they haven't read executive orders or they haven't, you know, studied it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to give the American people a simple set of criteria. Like, you know, I mentioned the other day about, we were together and I mentioned about Lara Logan put out 10 commandments for journalists, right? And the first commandment is to tell the truth, right? I mean, that's the first.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I wrote a paper a year and a half ago about the, you know, my rules for diplomacy, right? And my first rule, and Kerr and I didn't, you know, corroborate on it. My first rule mm-hmm. for diplomats is to tell the truth. And so I think that we need like a 10 commandments from Catherine Austin Fitz on what do we need. To give, I'll give them out. And I'll pass them out. You know.
Okay, so I'm going to ship you a whole bunch of these. It's called Coming Clean.
Okay.
And it's basically what I believe is that if you can clean out of your own life and your financial situation, mm-hmm. all the things you're doing, I liken the system to a tapeworm, and this is the equivalent of detoxing the tapeworm, and at least getting it out of your mind and out of your pocketbook, out of your wallet, out of your savings. Mm-hmm. And so we can bring it down to 10 commandments. I think that's a very good idea. But I do think if we can all stop financing the system that's killing us, the more we pull the money in a way that makes us stronger and makes the parasite weaker, yep. You know, every one of us that does it, we help everybody, but most of all ourselves and our family. So
right. I also think that you're talking about talking to our elected officials. The thing is the people, the elected officials, they're pastors, they're preachers, they're painters, they're attorneys, they're quote unquote normal people. The problem I see is it's hard as a former candidate, it's hard to get people to support you and to get people to support you, especially financially as a conservative. Oddly, the liberals have lots and lots of money from big organizations. As a conservative, it's very difficult. And it seems like people, it holds good people back because of the fear of running. And we really, truly need to support the good people. We need to support the good conservatives that are out there with their lives on the line fighting for our freedoms. And we need to make that very in vogue. And right now, it doesn't seem to be in vogue.
I agree. I think that actually I'm going to have to step away here, ladies, but I think that people in this country want fair elections, they want accountability, and they want economic freedom, or they want a sense that they can control their economic, financial lives. And I think that the more we are able to simplify, even though it's a very complex system, to simplify the understanding of how to do that, they cannot control fair elections. People, I mean, I say that a little bit tongue in cheek because we can get in there and argue with our elected officials. But at this stage and at this moment in time, creating the conditions for the fairness of our elections resides in one person right now. That's the President of the United States, and he's going to have to make a really difficult decision. The second thing is accountability. You know, we've all seen that it resides again at the top, and unless that something happens, you know, there's very little that the American people can do other than gripe about it. But the third piece, though, is this economic or financial freedom. And I think what Catherine just said is so enlightening. And people can do that. They actually can do that. And I think that it's you know, it doesn't mean that you have to stop getting up early in the morning and working hard every day. I'm not telling people that, you know, don't suddenly think that because if you're lazy, you're going to be financially, you know, okay. No, you got to work hard to do the things that to have the things that you want. So anyway, I'm honored that I have had this time. And Catherine, thank you so much for all that you're doing for this country.
Well, thank you so very, very much. I greatly appreciate you being here.
I just want to affirm again what Saga has been doing in Florida is fantastic. And anything you could do to support her would be very appreciated.
Oh, well, thank you. I think it's not so much of we need to stop looking for what they can do for us. And we need to come together about what we can do for each other. And I think that's what all of us are trying to do here is show how we, the people, can help each other out, even if it's as simple as start using cash as much as possible and support good people for candidates. Support them. If you can only give them $5, give them $5. That all helps. So again, thank you all for all that you are doing.
Beautiful. And let's keep fighting for the soul of the Republic.
The soul of the Republic. That's right.
All right. God bless.
Thank you. I would love to go a little bit deeper because, again, the Floridian future is a grassroots. What can we do at the basic, basic level? I'm trying to grow people up, teach people what we can do at a basic, basic level.
Okay. So let's just go down. Coming Clean is organized around the six pillars of building wealth. So those pillars are your free and inspired life, navigation tools, risk management, living equity, financial equity, and turtle forth. But let's just bring it down to 10 things. The first is prayer.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And the second is, get outdoors.
Yes.
I say that. I'm indoors right now. The third is start listening to sources of intelligence who are trustworthy. The fourth is find and support excellent leadership, and that's in all areas. So we'll put all areas there. The next is protect yourself from the great poisoning. Okay? And that's eat clean food. And, don't be very discerning of the healthcare system, and to the extent you can, be your own doctor. You've got to support your local farmers, and you've got to support the local healthcare practitioners who are truthful.
Yes.
Okay, so that's five. Six is you want to learn how the money works in your community. Seven is you want to bank with a well-governed local community bank or credit union. And eight is you want to invest in companies and institutions that are building the kind of world you want to live in, as opposed to financing your demise or, sending your kids to war. Nine, increase your learning metabolism, particularly about things that make you more resilient locally. And finally, you want to have faith and never quit. So you're going to turtle. Those are your 10.
I have a great story for when we get never quit. I can prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt the spirit that is in you. I can prove it. I can prove that God put in you a spirit that will never, ever quit. And if that's changed, it's not because of God that put it in you. It's because you pushed it. And you know how I can prove that to you?
Okay.
How? Can you walk?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, when you were little, you couldn't. And you saw everybody around you walking and you're trying to move and trying to move and trying to move. Okay. So then you get to where you crawl. Then you put your hand on the table and you get up and you fall however many times. And it took you months, if not over a year, to learn how to walk, but you never quit. You saw what you wanted. You saw what you wanted to do and you didn't quit. That's the spirit God put in you. People forget that.
Right. That's true. They do forget that.
Yeah.
They do forget that. So one of the things I remember when I was in my 20s, I started to read biographies of people I really admired. And I was shocked because if you look at all the obstacles they had to overcome, it was fantastically more than I ever dreamed. And I realized how hard it is to accomplish anything that, you know, is if, and that's why you have to do what is your passion.
Right.
Because if you, you know, it's so hard, and we're now in an environment where it's very hard friction, you know, high friction. So, you know, it's your passion that will drive you and keep you doing it because you're doing what your passion is, right? But you have to, you know, it takes tremendous, tremendous endurance to accomplish anything.
It does. Your passion gets you through. I think your passion gets you through the hard spots.
Right.
You know, it's like when I'm looking, you know, because I have a lot of friends that come and ask for help. And if they have some brand new idea, but they don't have a history or track record or whatever of following through on things, I'm kind of like, no, no, no. But those that have a passion, and they also, with that passion comes this optimism. Oh, well, they say this, but I can do this. That's what gets you through the hard times. It's like, sometimes I have to talk to myself too, give myself a back to Jesus talk. And it's like, what I come to is like, you know what? I must be doing something right because Satan's attacking me. So I'm on the right path. So here I go. And it just, it's that, all right, here we go. And so far I've made it through every single day that has been really rough. And here I am.
So the one thing I would say to everybody listening to this is I always recommend, so we have a Building Wealth curriculum at Solari, and in it is a learning plan, because I'm a great believer in not just budgeting your money, but budgeting your time.
Right.
Because especially in an environment where you have this kind of rapid change, your time is your most precious asset. So do a time budget, and there's instructions. If you need help with it, there's instructions at Building Wealth on how to do it. But just sit down and do a time budget and look at how you spend your time in you know, in a day, in a week, in a normal week, and a year, and then look at the things that are draining your energy or wasting your money or, you know, just, you know, not giving you the joy that you deserve, and look at, you know, identify what's draining your time or your resources, and then figure out what you can cut out. Just, you know, cancel that activity, you know, get out of that club. You know, stop watching that TV show, you know, whatever it is for you, and buy yourself 2 to 4 hours, and then take those 2 to 4 hours. You can go to Solari and it's public. You can download the PDF, you can print it out and go through these 10 items or the items in Coming Clean and say to yourself, where can I invest that 2 to 5 hours a week that will really improve my situation?
It's absolutely amazing. When I first heard you talk about that was when in one of the literacy, financial literacy classes that you did, and the time budget, because you're like, okay, so there's this many hours in a day, this many hours are sleeping, this many hours are eating. And then it's kind of like, wow, you have all this other time. So where are you putting that time? And I think about the people that it's like, you know, you go to anywhere and their face is in their phone, and it's like, it's sucking brain cells out of you. It's sucking productivity out of you. And that's something that you may, the little voice in there may be screaming like a toddler having a tantrum when you take it away. Push through it.
Right.
Because there's so much more you could be and so much more you could do. So that was very eye-opening.
Yeah, I heard Ed Elson at a conference, amazing speech. He has a podcast with Scott Galloway, and he said his generation, Generation Z, if you look at how they spend their time, they spend their time, it was 109, it was the equivalent of 109 days of time sleeping. Ugh. And then 106 days of time looking at a screen. And think of that. So think if you just cut that in half and took 53 days, the equivalent of 53 days a year, and you invested it in becoming great at a skill that would generate a higher income. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
You know, and let's say someday you want to run, be the CEO of a great home building company. Well, that means learn how to be a plumber, learn how to be an electrician, learn how to do construction, learn accounting, learn, you know, they're going a learning journey, but take that time and focus it on doing the things that are going to take you where you want to go.
I think the key word there for me anyway is focus, because I have learned so many different skills. I've done so many different things in my life, and people are like, oh, you can this. I said, yes, I can do that. However, I need to focus. And again, that's where my world to get, okay, Satan's trying to get me over here. I have to stay focused, stay focused, stay focused. And sometimes that's the hardest part for me. And that's why I write a lot, because when I write, it gets more into my head, and it's kind of like, okay, is this in essence in my wheelhouse? Is this going to help my plan of growing this organization? If it's not, I have to say no. So that's another, that time budget was, that really hit me. That was,
well, it was interesting good. Because Ricardo Oskim runs our building wealth curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so after we started working on the time budget, and I said, I got him and his wife to do a time budget. And that week, I was talking about what we call shadow work, which is the lack of reliability in other organizations that cause you to lose time or money.
Right.
And in that week, they went out to eat. So we try and encourage everybody to protect themselves against the great poisoning and be very, very careful. But they made an exception, went out to eat. They got food poisoning. And his wife lost 2.5 days of work. He lost a day of work. That's 3.5 days. And then they had somebody delivering kitchen equipment, and they messed up and brought the wrong thing. And so, you know, somebody stayed home from work, and then it was the wrong thing. And again, they had to stay home from work. And you counted that up, and that was basically 4 days. So between the two of them, they have 14 days in a week, right?
Right.
And they had lost 4 days just from going to a restaurant, you know, that was not, it's too, you know, it's taking a risk. They don't have the quality that if you're going to protect yourself against great poisoning, that, you know, there you go.
That's so amazing.
Right. But when he sat down and looked at how much, you know, we're all just trying to make it work and make it go and going through our life. But when he sat down and he looked at the cost of 4 days of those, you know, of dealing with, you know, of buying kitchen equipment for price instead of reliability, or, you know, it turned out not to be cheaper, right? And the cost of going to a restaurant that you knew you really shouldn't go to.
Yeah. And I think that's, yeah. I think you hit so many nails on the head there. But I have a lot of talk with several friends of mine, because in my world, as a kid, we're taught buy really, really good shoes. Because if you buy really, really good shoes, they last longer. And it was kind of like only rich people can buy disposable stuff, because otherwise you're buying 3 or 4 pair of shoes to get around when you could buy one really, really good pair. And to this day, I still adhere to that. So sometimes my friend, oh, well, where did you get this? And I said, well, I got it here. And they're like, oh, that's kind of expensive. And I was like, I won't have to replace it.
Right,
so
exactly.
Yes, it is expensive. Yes, things are not made like they used to. However, the price is worth it, because then you can get it, move on. You don't have to keep getting more and more and more or different.
Right, right.
But yeah, and the food, that's another one. Food is a hard one.
So going on the learning journey to meet all your local farmers, find your local farmer market, find the, you know, I always tell people, if you want to find the people who love freedom in a place, go find the foodies. You know, go find
True.
The raw milk people. Yeah.
True.
There's a magazine called Edible Communities. It's a franchise operation. I thought I knew all the farmers and food sources in my area. And then I got the Edible Communities magazine for Memphis. And I was just stunned, because there were so many other great resources there. You know, Weston Price has chapters all over the country. So another thing is to find the Weston Price guys, because they can educate you, or if you have an Edible Communities magazine, that can work. You know, if you just spend a lot of time at the farmers markets, pretty much you'll network everybody. But they often will plug you into the good healthcare practitioners.
Right.
Because the number one financial problem that every family, You know, if you just look statistically across the board, the number one financial problem in America is everybody's been poisoned, and it's running up there. It's causing them to lose time. They're getting sick. You know, they're not productive, or they're not as productive as they could be, but they're also wasting a ton of money on healthcare.
Well, they're also wasting a ton of money on supplements.
Right. Right. Although I'm guilty. I'm guilty of that.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. There are valid supplements, but even with, it's a multi-billion dollar business. So you're going to be sold. It's like this one friend of mine, she goes through one thing after another, and there are differences in supplements the same as there are differences in anything else. However, I did a cleanse where I stopped all my supplements except, this was kind of interesting. I had rotator cuff surgery. So I've always been, I want my body to heal itself and I'll do whatever I can to get that. So for 2 months before my surgery, and there was no way that the body could heal because it was a complete tear, but I knew I had to eat a lot of extra protein and a lot of the essential amino acids. So I quit all my other supplements and all I did was the essential aminos. And when I say I upped my protein, well, I found a place where I could get like the real milk, raw milk, whatever you want to call it, real milk and eggs. And I would like crack 2 eggs in my blender, put some milk in there. I mean, I enormous amounts of protein. And they say that this is one of the most painful surgeries ever. After the surgery, I had no pain. I mean, none. Even the doctor, he's done tens of thousands of these. He said he's only had one other patient like that. The other thing I was doing was lymphatic flush exercises. All of this you can do at home. I didn't go somewhere to get it done. All of this I did at home. So I spent, quote unquote, more, except I had to buy less groceries because I bought the correct groceries and I did the exercises. I had zero pain afterward. I have healed incredibly. And the thing is, the body is made to heal itself. We are created to heal itself.
Right. But let's go back. Let's look at your time budget. You took the time to research and investigate and understand how to care for your own health.
Correct.
And then you spent the money to do what you had to do. And if you will, this is why your learning plan is so important and your time budget is so important. You want to focus on them on things that dramatically improve your health, your strength, your intelligence, and do all those things in a way that then serves your management of your finances and economics. And if you will do that, if you will strip out of your life, you know, if you look at the things we do that waste time and money in most Americans, it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. You know, but if we will cut out those things and re-engineer the money to really starting to progress up the, you know, the health ladder, it can make an enormous difference to your finances.
That's so true. And thankfully, the DPC, which is direct primary care, also part of the free market medical, is growing now. So friends of mine, both of them were nurse practitioners, her and her husband, both nurse practitioners, worked for a big company. And I'd been talking to them and she's very much into the whole health freedom. That's where I met her, was I was talking at a health freedom rally. And they just last year, and they were so afraid to do this, opened up a direct primary care where you pay like $75 a month and you get the unlimited, and they were so afraid. And now they're like, oh my goodness, we have to stop taking people. We have too many now and it's growing. And I was like, exactly, because people want that, because our healthcare now, it's not healthcare.
It's not healthcare. Jennifer Walters, who runs our, you know, she does the health series on Solari. She's so funny. She said after she had a son who was vaccine injured, and she said, one of the things I discovered is everything that would heal him, I had to pay cash for. And so I had to say, you know something, take the insurance and stuff it.
Yeah,
I am just paying cash for everything, because the people who do that can only take cash.
That is so true.
Right.
That is so true.
Right. It's
that
true.
That is so true. With that, it's because I'm part of health sharing, which are these Christian sharing plans. It's not insurance, it's health sharing. So for
I used to be in Samaritan. So
that's the one I'm in, is Samaritan.
Oh, are you? Yeah, I love Samaritan. It was
great. I do too. So there are ways to get around it. I think most people, I don't know if they've gotten lazy or they consider, you know, it's again, they're sacrificing their freedom for convenience, I guess is how I put it.
You know, here's the thing. You've been taught to do something, and it's a habit, it's a pattern, and it's very difficult to break the pattern unless you have a paradigm shift in outlook.
That's true.
So think of it this way, you know, think of how we manage our lives as a system, like a computer. We have an operating system, and then we have 50 different databases. We have a database for, you know, we have 10 databases for finance. You know, one's called banking, and we have 10 databases for health and, you know, various different things. So we have this, and somebody comes, you know, you or I come to you and say, look, you have to change this database. You've got the wrong database. If you want to be financially free, you got to change, you know, you got to start doing as much cash as possible. And you look at it and you say, wait a minute, I can't use that database with my current operating system. It means I have to change my operating system, which means I have to change 50 other databases. And that's too hard, right?
Right.
But what is happening in the world now is things have become so shocking and extreme. People are saying, you know something? I'm going to change my operating system.
Right.
Because I got to change all these different databases. And so that's when the shift comes. And we're going into that shift. And that's why this year is going to be a period of all these changes that everybody kept waiting for. They're really going to start happening. So it's happening.
Do you think it's along the same lines as the story about the frog and the boiling water?
No.
That we've been in that water? No.
No, because, you know, that dynamic has been going on.
Right.
But the thing that has been going on is you have military grade neurowarfare working on the frog.
Well, that's true, too.
And that makes it a very different formula. And the problem is, you know, you can't start to protect yourself against the technology until you realize that it really exists and you understand it. And you get over the shock and the grief of realizing I've allowed myself to be brainwashed. So it's a pretty shocking moment. And it's a pretty, you know, it took me about a year to go through that.
It is. It's like, and also with all the 5G, I remember people talking way back when about, oh my goodness, 5G and now 6G. And the thing is, we had great communication with 4G. So all this is not about communication. All this is about, and then also I've been learning this past year, focusing on the radio frequencies and the electric magnetic fields and the effects, because the clinic that I worked at in Minnesota, there's a lot of highly sensitive people, but the thing is, we are an electrical current.
Right.
Our bodies, that's why they do EEGs. That's why we are an electrical current.
We're electrical, and that's part of what the technology is about, is controlling our electromagnetic field and trying to influence and manipulate it. So I'm going to tell one story that drives one of my partners crazy because I keep bringing it up. So I worked on Wall Street. I loved it. I was an investment banker, so I would package deals and then they would have to be marketed through the syndicate desk and the trading floor. And I loved going down and spending time with the syndicate guys. And it was my job to lead the pricing of the deal because it was primary market stuff. And you know, something we had, landlines and number two pencils. That's what we had. We didn't have any software. We didn't have emails. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have any of that stuff. And you know something?
You got it done.
It worked better. Okay. It worked better.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have to spend all of our time putting in lots of data so that the intelligence agencies and everyone else could surveil everything we're doing, take the data, use it for all sorts of stuff. It worked much better. It was unbelievable. And, you know, but we had a rule. You either did what you said, you kept your word. You said, yes, no, 9 5/8. You kept your word and you did what you said, or you communicated instantly. And if you didn't, you just got fired, you know? And so over time, the only people who stayed were the ones who were really good and could get anything done with number two pencils and landlines. I'll never forget going to the wonderful museum in Sarasota, Florida, of the Ringling Brothers Circus.
Oh, the Ringling Museum? Oh, it's fabulous.
If you go to the Ringling Museum And they have that what do they call it? It's the circus in little toys.
Right.
Right. What do they call it? It's like a model.
It's like the whole big, huge.
It's everything. It's the trains. It's trucks. Yeah, it's the elephants.
I know what you're talking about. That big miniature.
And people.
Everything.
And they used to pack that up, put it on transportation, trains and trucks, move it, you know, hundreds of miles, unpack it, do it again. And they did it all with number two pencils. They didn't even have landlines. Okay.
Right.
Right. All worked like a charm.
That was when people had brains and they had, it's kind of like, okay. And they were all part of the community and on the same wavelength as it were. Oh, those days.
Well, that was life. That was life before surveillance systems.
That's right. True.
Right.
That's
we could
true.
Just do the work instead of feeding the surveillance system while we're doing the work.
No.
Anyway,
man.
So I just remind everybody, things can work.
Things can work. And that's, yeah. You know, again, I so appreciate that about you because it's very hopeful. We are in a very hopeful world. I'm reading a book now called Madam Secretary about Frances Perkins, who was the first woman appointed secretary under FDR. And the things that they were going through back then, just fresh out of the Depression and coming up with the New Deal and Social Security and all the labor stuff and all the attacks that they had against them then. And it's like every era has something. There's something huge for every era. Spanish-American War, people had to think it was the end of the world. World Wars I, II, end of the world. You know, Hiroshima, end of the world, all this. And you know what? A day to the Lord is 1,000 years to you and me. So it may happen tomorrow, which would be 1,000 years.
I went back. So I was an investment advisor for 10 years, and I went back to 1900, and I said, okay, knowing what I know now, if I was in 1900, how would I invest? What kind of portfolio strategy would I use to get through the 20th century? And I realized, wow, if you look at what they managed through. And interestingly enough, the rules, you know, if you live with very old wealth and you follow the rules they follow, you know, there's a technology, they know how to do it and it really works. You can make your, you know, but you have to rock and roll. On the first meeting that the Solaria team had this year, somebody said, okay, you know, we know what the tagline was last year. What's our word for the year? What's our tagline for 2026? I said, rock and roll. Because yes. You're going to have wild opportunities, but wild risks. And, you know, and it's like the oil business. I used to have a lot of clients in the oil business when I was on Wall Street. And they used to just say, you know, and you'd sit down with a guy who's a multimillionaire, a billionaire, and he's totally humble, you know, as humble as you can be. And you ask him how he does it. And he says, you know something? When you're in this business, one day you're a billionaire, the next day you're broke, the next day you're a billionaire. And you learn to start realizing that's not your life. Your money's not your life. It's just something that's around sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, right.
Well, Catherine, this has been great. I don't know how we're going to break this up. I think we ought to just do it as a wonderful conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, we just do it as a conversation. And again, I just want to tell everybody in Florida who's listening to this, please get behind. You know, I said, what was the one where I said, find your leaders and help them?
Yes.
You know, you help this person because she knows what to do. You're doing great work. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate being in cahoots with you.
Well,
and
thank
you. I remember I was tremendously busy when you first called me, but you were like a tiger. You were not going to stop calling.
I was respectful, though.
No, you were very respectful. But I said, okay, this woman knows how to turtle. She's one of us.
I definitely turtle forth. And again, I from the bottom of my heart, greatly appreciate you getting back to me and the relationship that we've built. And I so admire you and your intellect. And I don't think there's anybody more qualified or more credentialed. And thank you so much for spreading the word to the commoners, to not that you're not, but the normal people to help. And breaking it down, because again, the least you can do is use cash.
Yes. If everybody will just use cash as much as possible, but you know, tell everybody, tell your friends, tell your family, get, you know, pick out 10 people and get them using cash and tell them to do the same. This can absolutely go. Okay.
Yes. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.